So, Roy Conley, you're the producer of the new hit movie known in the United States as Tangled, known around the rest of the world as Rapunzel, am I right?
Yes, also in France it's Réponse, and in Spain, in the Spanish-speaking countries, it's Enredados.
So, as producer, you're the one who's entirely and solely responsible for Tangled's success, am I right?
Yeah.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 212, Disney's Tangled Rapunzel. One of the most successful movies out this holiday season is the Walt Disney Studios' 50th animated feature, Tangled. And Roy Conley, an old friend and theater colleague, is the film's producer. What does a film producer do? Good question. If you haven't seen Tangled yet, take a moment now to go to a cinema and check it out. Go ahead, we'll wait. See? Wasn't that good? Now, you're ready to hear Roy talk about the making of Tangled specifically and the craft of filmed animation generally.
The thing I love about animation is it is purely a collaborative effort.
Right.
It is so collaborative. I would put theater and animation very close together in terms of the collaborative process. The only difference is that there is a heck of a lot more people that you're dealing with in animation than in a theater piece.
Well, so let's talk about the movie itself, which is fantastic.
Right. And
Dee and the kids and I all loved it. Well, let's start with the title. So it's known in it's the Rapunzel story, or based on the Rapunzel story, the Grimm fairy tale.
Okay.
But it's known in this country as Tangled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And was that done, as all the media pundits say, to not scare off boys?
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting. It's been really wonderful watching that whole thing play out from about a year ago when we decided.
The story of it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because once we started working on this film with the directors, Nathan Greno and Byron Howard, who are two really amazing animation directors, it became evident that this was a dual protagonist story. That, you know, we had taken a story using the character of Rapunzel and we had transformed it to the point where it was actually becoming its own story.
Right.
And we felt that, you know, I mean, I think Nathan said it the best, is that we wouldn't ever call Toy Story Buzz Lightyear.
Right.
And, you know, we started looking for an alternate title because we really wanted it to reflect the kind of great, action-packed, comedic-driven, you know, heartfelt story that it is. And Tangled, just from a metaphoric standpoint, seems so good in terms of, you know, the hair, her situation, his situation, the forest, and how they travel through, and it just became really the only title we could think that would fit this actual story.
But yet you didn't go with that title in other countries.
Well, that's because the metaphor doesn't work in other countries. If you were to say Tangled in French, it actually means confused. The word Tangled means confused. And it doesn't work in German either.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Enredados, on the other hand, means the same thing. And so you were able to, you know, utilize that for that particular region.
Well, and what fascinated me watching it was that Tangled, yes, all those thematic things you were talking about, but in terms of the storytelling, I thought, was sort of Tangled because, and even the commercials for Tangled, you know, because it is, in many senses, a classic Disney animated musical of the old school. And in fact, the first, I don't know, quarter, first fifth of it feels very much like, and so I was kind of sitting there going, really? Really? Is this what all the fuss is about? But then the dual protagonist nature kicks in, the action stuff kicks in, the beauty of the animation just gets lusher and lusher and lusher. The songs are there. The character of Mother Gothel's psychology kicks in, and that is talk about Tangled. Did you not go with the title F***ed Up? Did you think of that at any
point? No, a couple of times. There were other. You know, we were thinking of putting some rap numbers in, and we were thinking of Rapunzel, but it didn't work. No, you know, I mean, for us, when we started this thing, sat down with the directors, and we basically wanted to make a 21st century Disney film. Yeah. And one of the things in terms of the musical content, we wanted to make a Disney film that felt not necessarily like the 90s musicals, mm-hmm. but more like the 50s and 40s and 30s musicals, yeah. in the sense that we wanted the music. We wanted it to be a movie with music, yeah. as opposed to a musical.
Right.
And then you're working with Alan, who is brilliant.
Alan Menken, did write the music for Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And it was a tough assignment for him because, you know, Alan is brilliant at what he does, and so he had to stretch a little bit in terms of this new format. So, you know, fundamentally there are five songs in the piece right now. I think they're wonderful. One is nominated for a Golden Globe and a Critics' Choice Award, may I say?
Congratulations.
Thank you. As is the film.
Well, you must be very proud having written it.
Yes, exactly. No. Well, I would say that this film has really touched the hearts of a lot of people, and I came from theater, that's where we know each other, mm-hmm. and 17 years ago I started with Disney in animation, and this is definitely the high point of my career. Yeah. I think this piece, of all the pieces I've worked on, there's just something magic about it, and the idea that we wanted to tell a contemporary story, but not a topical story. Mm-hmm. We wanted to tell a story that was not cynical, but that was truly from the heart. Mm-hmm. Because so many animated films now really use cynicism as the kind of basis of their humor.
Right.
And we wanted to tell a Disney story. Mm. And at the same time, we didn't want to shrink away from the heart.
Right.
You know, and...
Or humor, or sort of wise-ass humor.
Absolutely. Yeah. The humor is great. I mean, yeah. we were very lucky. We worked with a writer by the name of Dan Fogelman, mm-hmm. who is probably one of the hottest writers in Hollywood right now. He just finished the latest Steve Carell film, and he's got a couple of other things around town that are just, kind of burning hot. And
right.
He's terrific.
As I sat there thinking in the first fifth of the movie, kind of going, really? I went, no, it's got to have a killer ending, because this movie is getting the kinds of reviews that I always associate with movies that have great endings. Yeah. So it doesn't matter what came before, but you went out on a high.
Well, one of the things that as we were approaching the story, we knew that we would always want to take a left turn where people thought we would take a right.
Yeah.
And in doing that, once again, you didn't have to become cynical to do that.
Yeah.
You just had to make a choice that was interesting.
Yeah.
So
and real.
And real.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Because, let's face it, our own lives.
Yeah.
We take left turns all the time.
Yeah, yeah,
In fact, I always gear towards the left myself. But we always take left turns, and we wanted that, and that's right. True life. And so that was one of the things we decided. And even in the selection of the side, the sidekicks.
Yeah.
We didn't want a squirrel. We didn't want a bird. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. where the chameleon Pascal came.
Yeah.
And then, at one point we realized, and this was well into the development process of the story, we realized that if you had a film in which Mother Gothel was always in pursuit, it became very episodic because you kept on cutting back and forth from Mother Gothel,
yes.
to the Rapunzel and Flynn off in the woods, and then back to Mother Gothel.
Yeah.
So we knew we needed to bring in another antagonist. And initially we said, oh, how about the Captain of the Guard? The Captain of the Guard could be a good character.
Yeah.
And then one of the story guys said, no, the Captain of the Guard's horse. And that's where the brilliance of Maximus came in, who is my favorite character, and who I think has one of the greatest arcs of the in terms of character arcs in the film.
Well, and possibly in animation. I mean, Maximus is one of those characters. I was just looking at the drawings on the walls in the waiting area. Maximus could get a sequel. Maximus could get his own movie. Maximus, even in the bad reviews, I've seen maybe two bad reviews of the movie.
Yeah.
Even in the bad reviews, Maximus gets positively mentioned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, one of the things that we recognize too in animation is that it's a visual art form.
Yeah.
And to have two outstanding characters in Pascal and Maximus who are mute,
yeah.
and who essentially you understand every aspect of their thought process.
Yeah. All right, so you talked about Dan Fogelman. You talked about this nameless story editor who better get a bump.
Because, yeah, exactly. Well, no, there's, you know, you've got, look, you know, Mark Kennedy was our head of story. And then, you know, I cannot speak highly enough about our two directors, Nathan Greno and Byron Howard. I mean, those two guys are absolutely great storytellers.
Well, and the character of Maximus is, for instance, is so visual. And even the villainess, Mother Gothel, who's voiced by Donna Murphy, their physical performances, both the horse, I mean everybody's, but those two in particular, how do you create those physical performances? Are you videotaped Donna Murphy dancing around a room, or is it the animators making faces in the mirrors? How does that work?
It is the animators making faces in the mirrors. It is the animators dancing around in the room. It is, to a certain degree, the inspiration of Donna's amazing performance, Mandy's amazing performance, Zach's amazing performance. Yeah. There is so much in, you know, performing for a microphone is really difficult. Yeah. There are a handful of people who can do it, and we were really lucky to find three leads who were just phenomenal.
There's so much behavior in what they're doing. So many little asides and breathing things that you
Well, the other thing about that is, you know, you pre-edit animation. Yeah. I mean, as you're going through the story, you storyboard it, you know, which is basically like an elongated comic book. Mm-hmm. And then you take it down to...
And when you say, back up to the storyboard, because Dee and I worked here for 10 years ago in development here at Disney Features Animation, and you would see walls and walls and hallways covered with these pictures telling the story of the movie. So it's not just, hey, look through this flip chart.
No. It is literally, you are going beat by beat, telling the story. Yeah. And so, you know, you see the thought progression with these static images. Mm-hmm. You then go down to the editor, and we had an amazing editor with Tim Mertens who, you know, basically then cuts that together with a, you know, you start off with a scratch soundtrack. So, you know, my director played Flynn, you know, I would play a thug. You know, we had, someone comes in and plays Rapunzel. And you cut it together, you put a soundtrack to it, so you put effects and music, and you actually, that becomes the draft of your script, essentially.
Yeah.
And then every 3 months, we'll take a look at that, and then go back in and configure it. And it's just, it's a wonderful plastic process that continues to grow through the building of the film.
Hey, hello. I'm Adrian Scarborough from TV's Gavin and Stacey, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Lucky you.
Where can you see the RSC? Next week, we kick off 2011 by returning for the seventh time to the Pittsburgh Public Theater with the complete World of Sports Abridged, followed by performances of sports in Athens, Georgia, Decatur and Birmingham, Alabama, Fairbanks, Alaska, Nacogdoches and Austin, Texas, Newark, New Jersey, Reston, Virginia, Worcester, Mass., Manchester, New Hampshire, Algona, Iowa, Duluth, Minnesota, and Batavia, Illinois. But that's not all. We're also returning to Belgium and Holland with a six-week tour of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, revised, starting in February. And that's not all either. Just before Christmas, we learned that we'll be traveling to a fourth country in 2011, but that's all I can tell you for now. We'll have more information about that in the coming weeks. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to reducedshakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Roy Conley, the producer of Disney's 50th animated feature, Tangled. Roy and I met when we were both in the MFA directing program at Boston University, so I asked him how his theater background helps in his current role as film producer.
When I left BU, I was running a little Shakespeare company up in Maine, the Camden Shakespeare Company, with Bruce Hazard, and we had a great time. And then I was hired from there to the Mark Taper Forum, which is the regional theater in Los Angeles, and for 4 years, basically worked in new play development very closely with Bob Egan, who I actually continue to have a working relationship with, because I, you know, am involved with the Ojai Playwrights Conference. And, you know, from that, I actually produced a piece, because I learned early that I was a better producer than a director, because I always had a very solid vision of what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found that the greatest directors go with the flow. And, you know, I always had too strong of an image of what I wanted, and I would try and force a production into that. Uh-huh. Whereas as a producer, I can look at great directors and I can work with them and I can appreciate their talent, and you know, help supply that, you know, second eye or third eye,
right?
Depending on whether you have two directors or one.
So does that mean you're a better collaborator or a better I'm trying to think of the differences between the direct, the skill, the craft of directing, and the craft of producing.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I have a strong engineering mind. You know, it's it's interesting, because I think the element that was...
I go back to, because I know megalomaniacal directors,
right.
who say, my way or the highway,
right, and you must do this.
But you weren't like that.
No, I wasn't.
Because I remember watching you work, and maybe you weren't enough. Maybe that was the problem.
Maybe I wasn't a big enough, you know, asshole. But no, it's funny.
That's always been your problem.
I think when I was it's funny because, I started as an actor, went to ACT, and then fell into producing basically by working, you know, reopening the Pasadena Playhouse. Mm-hmm. You know, got involved with a group of people there. And, you know, just found that I could build things, found that I could actually, I had that kind of left brain, right brain thing that was in balance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and from that I went, did the MFA in Boston, and then just always found that as a collaborator, I could pull things together. And I could pull things together and appreciate people who were more talented than me.
A great skill.
Absolutely.
A great skill. Well, and you were always a great cheerleader. And I bet that's part of your job as well.
Oh, hugely. Yeah. I mean, I think my job as a producer is basically, you know, creating a safe playground. Yeah. You know, it's about establishing a space where people can come and give their best. And if somebody is being, you know, naughty, you have to go and kind of straighten that situation out and then move on.
Right.
But it's really about creating a playground where you are allowed to fail.
Yeah.
But knowing when you have to succeed in order to get it done.
Right.
And then it's team building.
Yeah.
You know, it's about really making sure that the chemistry is working between your various departments. And then it's making sure that communication is functioning.
Yeah.
And communication is the biggest issue, particularly when you're, you know, working on a film of this magnitude. You've got to make sure that everybody from, you know, I mean, I always say that, the weakest PA is your strongest link.
Well, and you've got hundreds of people working on this movie. You're not dealing with all the hundreds and thousands of people, but you're dealing with in terms of your communication, you're communicating with a large team. And then you're the producer, John Lasseter, who the head of Pixar, now the head of Disney, and Glenn Keane were the executive producers. Presumably they're riding herd on you, who are riding herd on the directors and letting them.
John is an amazing presence in the studio. I mean, he's really helped, I think, turn Disney around. Yeah. And, you know, for me, in the 17 years that I have been here, the last four have been absolutely heaven. Mm. You know, I mean, I feel that what John I liken it to, you know, there was a blight in the vineyards of France in the 1960s, and they had to go back to California to get vines that had actually come from France and bring them back to France. John coming back home, it's been like that. He's just kind of...
That's right. He's a former Disney animator.
He started at Disney back in the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. I think it was 80, 81, something like that. But, you know, to have an executive who's a filmmaker, oh my gosh, what a blessing.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, but it's not the end of my interview with Roy Conley. We spoke for almost 40 minutes, so I put it to a vote on Twitter whether I should make this one long, epic podcast or divide it into two episodes. The voting was conclusive, and so, because of the length of our conversation and my limited editing time because of my holiday and Pittsburgh travel schedule, and because I can turn this into two podcasts in the time it usually takes me to edit one, this epic two-part interview with Roy Conley will conclude next year, by which I mean, of course, next week. Send us your musical fairy tales via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews at our podcast page on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, pantomime sidekick Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Carrie Milliken. No reason, it's just random. Thanks to Adrian Scarborough, who's playing Mr. Pritchard the Butler in the new Upstairs Downstairs, currently airing on the BBC and set to debut on PBS's Masterpiece Theater in the U.S. in April. And thanks very much to you for listening. Happy New Year and all the best to you in 2011. I'm Austin Titchener, 212-636th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. You alluded briefly to your career as your background as an actor. Do we want to talk about your groundbreaking performance as a 6 foot 6 inch drag queen in Bent?
You know,
or should we save that for another podcast?
You do what you have to do for your art. What can I say?
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.